You thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the urban sports scene.
You are listening to the urban sports scene. I am Wole here. My boy Will T. Ray Jeezy is out. I'm going to cue in you, Will T. And you know we're doing our social distance show. What's going on, Will T?
Nothing much, man. How you doing?
I'm good, my man. Good, man. A lot going on, man. In terms of the viewership of sports. The last episodes were done over the weekend. You saw what Horace Grant had to say about
absolutely.
Oh man,
the so-called documentary.
Yeah, I mean we said that though at the same time. And I went, folks who are listening to the show. At times when they hear me talk about Jordan and whatnot, I want people to understand this. Like, I respect Jordan. I respect greatness. It's one thing I always will do is respect greatness. I know it may seem to some folks that I'm a hater, but I'm not. I respect greatness. You know, I just don't think of him as highly as other folks do. But you know, I know he's great. I think he's one of the all-time greats. He's one of the GOATs in basketball. But at the same time, no, that's the thing about a documentary. Everybody takes it as the gospel. But, you know, when somebody else calls something out, you know, I'm interested to see what kind of play it gets. And Horace Grant had a lot to say.
He did. It was interesting reading through some of his comments. I do agree with Horace Grant on this.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever it's a documentary,
yes,
a documentary shouldn't be controlled,
mm-hmm,
or executive produced by the person who is the lead or the subject of the documentary, right?
Yeah.
If you want to get people the unbiased truth about Michael Jordan, and I know him being attached to the documentary is the only way that you would be able to get some of the people to speak,
mm-hmm,
on camera.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right? I don't think you would have gotten Bill Clinton, former President Bill Clinton and Barack Obama to speak if Jordan was not attached to,
mm-hmm,
that document.
Of course, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, Horace Grant, you can't necessarily be that upset about how you're depicted because you had an opportunity. Story. Now I understand they have to go to the edit and they edit certain things out, but you know, if you felt or his leadership or some of the stories that were told, you probably should have articulated that in the documentary.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no,
damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, obviously you should pay attention to what's going to be played, right? Because it's not live. You want to get an opportunity to view it and say, you know what, I don't agree with this. So you should have viewed the documentary. You had the right. You're on it, right? So you have the right to view it and see, you know, if you know it all like you're depicted in the accurate way. So yeah, I'm with you, Will T. I mean, that's on Horace, right?
I don't think you could take anything away from it. I think it accomplished what it was set out to do, which was to introduce Michael Jordan to another generation of basketball fans and players and spectators and lovers of the game. And it also put his name out there, right? Because, mm-hmm, you know, if you're a fan, you know, let's say I'm 10 years old or 12 years old, I'm coming into the age, to the point where I'm starting to really love basketball and I'm doing research and I'm trying to find out more history or knowledge of the game. You know, I hear Michael Jordan, if I haven't done my research, I just think owner of the Bobcats, one of the worst franchises in the NBA,
mm-hmm,
but he makes some pretty dope shoes,
mm-hmm,
you know? So it was good to get his name out there and get the history out there and hear some of the stories.
But, also, I want to make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play. Search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, join our Urban Sports Scene Facebook group. Search Urban Sports Scene Sports Bloggers, Sports Podcasters, and Sports Debates. It's a nice little group. It's like chill group. It's pretty fun.
Moderated by you.
Of course, man.
Moderated by you.
Thanks for the plug, man. Appreciate it. Hey, Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
Here's what we have on tap. We will recap the Kevin Durant's Showtime documentary, Basketball County in the Water. It's about PG County Ballers. At 8:25, there was a
pivotal exclusion from that documentary.
I know you're gonna say. I know. We'll discuss. Fine. I wanted to have you on last week so we can kind of talk about that. Talk about the documentary and your impact. I mean, yeah, just your impact into PG basketball.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
At 8:25, we'll determine who should be on the Wizards/Bullets all-time top five list. Finally, at 8:35, we'll discuss the last episodes of MJ's Bulls documentary, The Last Dance, which we discussed briefly in the beginning of the show. But first, last Friday, KD's documentary, Basketball County in the Water, aired on Showtime. The documentary talked about the history of PG balling, PG balling lifestyle. Your thoughts on the documentary?
I think it was a good documentary. I thought it would have been a very good starting point. In all seriousness, like take me, you know, what I'm going to jokingly say, you know, in the next couple of minutes out of it. Mm-hmm. I think it was a great documentary. I think it was just a starting point. I would have liked to have seen, you know, maybe three or four episodes, mm-hmm. just because if you're from the area, you know just how rich the lineage is of NBA talent that's come through this county,
mm-hmm.
and also its impact from a cultural standpoint. And also its impact from a business standpoint. I would have loved to seen, heard far more tales and stories about, you know, some of the people featured in the documentary,
mm-hmm.
some of their trials and tribulations and how they ascended to this point or ascended to a certain point of basketball stardom in their career.
No, I don't want to sound critical because it's hard to put a documentary together. And obviously you can tell, like, maybe Showtime was in play and it was like, okay, you only have an hour to do this, right? So it's hard mm-hmm. for me to, like, to be very critical of it. But to what it accomplished, I think it did its part. It did what it was set out to accomplish. Excuse me, because it was there to educate the outsides about PG balling, right? So, you know, you got to just to seeing what it's about balling in PG. I had somebody on Facebook was like, I didn't know so many basketball stars came out of Prince George's County. You know what I'm saying? So, in terms of putting that out there, in terms of educating folks, it did that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he navigated certain stories and interwove certain elements
mm-hmm.
About Prince George's County and basketball brilliantly. You know,
I thought so too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the discussion about, you know, the inclusion of Go-Go.
Yeah,
I think was key.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Did you like the way he did that? Because this is the thing. I thought that was a reach. I'm not going to lie.
I don't think it's a reach. I mean, it's something. It's something that it's a huge cultural influence
mm-hmm.
on this area, right? Like mm-hmm. growing up, I tell people all the time, I was not the biggest fan of Go-Go music,
mm-hmm.
but I like the energy that it brought.
Of course,
going to a Go-Go,
mm-hmm.
right? I like, you know, when I used to play basketball, which we'll get into later. We actually used to warm up to Go-Go music
yeah.
when we went to out of town tournaments,
mm-hmm.
right? And we brought that element to it. People would be like, "What's that? What's that?" You know. So it was cool. It was an essential element of the story if you're going to tell a story of Prince George's County basketball.
No, I mean, definitely. I learned something new. Like, I didn't, the way they broke down how the DC, you know, in terms of the individual who went to, who was in Harvard, you know, teaching physical education and whatnot, and, you know, met Dr. Naismith, and, you know, from there, you know, brought that to D.C. and cultivated a style of basketball that was more, you know, for African-Americans, in terms of playing basketball the right way, how that in D.C. trickled down to Prince George's County and then built this whole culture of basketball. Like, I didn't know that ahead of time. I didn't know that back. I didn't know that. And then when watching that and educating me on that, I thought that was pretty hip.
Yeah, it was a good document. It was a good, I'm not going to call it, I'm not going to, it was a great documentary for them to fit all of those elements in within an hour. There are some stories that you definitely could have teased out a little bit more. You know, but I do love that they did hit on limb bias. And I also love that they also the inclusion of the Capitol All-Star
game. I thought that was amazing. I thought it was great. They needed to. I actually would like that, you know, more,
like,
though.
Paying homage because for the longest time outside of the McDonald's All-American game, the Capital City All-Star game was one of the biggest high school All-Star games in the country.
Yeah, the Capital Classic. No, you're fine. The Capital Classic was amazing. I remember as a kid, like, you know, you took pride when you found out, like, the area beat, like, the McDonald's All-Americans. Like, you took pride. It was, you know what I mean? It was like, you didn't even have to, like, you may have not had a representative in, you know, in that game. But you say, oh, our folks versus, you know, McDonald's All-Americans. Oh, we beat them? Snap. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it made you feel like, all right. Our area has ballers, even as a youngster.
It was great. And then, you know, the inclusion of all of the great players from here, you know, Adrian Dantley, Michael Beasley, Michael Sweeney got love in there.
Quentin Cook.
I mean, you know, and then, they talked about AAU basketball. And kind of, you know, how that came to, you know,
fruition.
To the rise it did. And, you know, they mentioned one program specifically. I think they should have went.
PG Jaguars. That's right. Go ahead.
I think they should have went a little bit deeper. Because if I recall, there's one team specifically that's kind of sort of like started to pave the way and put that program on the map. I'm not going to say who was a part of that team.
No, go ahead, bro. You got to. You got to start.
I don't.
Who was on your squad, though? Who was on your squad, though?
Look, we're not saying it's me. Look, let's not say me.
Who was on that team? Who was on that? Okay, cool. Who was on that team that you were on?
We're discussing it.
Who was on that team that you were on?
No one that's made it, like, major big, but, you know, rest in peace, Big Ron. That's where actually I met Ron. For those who, anyone who, a friend of myself or Wally, or went to school with Wally, you probably know Ron. Now, I came across Ron when I was 13 years old. He was probably the biggest human being I ever saw in person.
You ain't lying.
No, seriously.
It's the truth. Like, I know.
Yeah, when I was 13, and I was like, yo, you, how old are you? I was like, jeez. He was the biggest human being I ever saw.
That's real talk, bro.
it was. You know, then there are a couple other people. I'm not going to put no one's name out here, just in case. But that, you know, the team, they won a tournament in Georgia by an athletic shoe company that was just starting out. Now it's become one of the biggest AAU tournaments. But it was in Atlanta back in circa 1994, 1995, something like that. It's called the Peach Jam.
Okay.
Prince George's County Jaguars, they went down there. They won it, you know. I was a part of that team. I still got my gold medal. I don't have it. My mom has it. But, you know. Nah, but seriously, and all seriously like that, you know, I mentioned the local AMs because those are, you know, it's big business now. Like, at first, it just started out, you know, for a lot of people, for adults who put together that AAU, local AAU program, to start out like kind of a passion project, a way to give back to the community and take, you know, and give kids exposure to be able to travel state to state and play games, playing tournaments and get recognition that they normally wouldn't get, especially in the pre-internet days. But now AAU basketball has become a thing, right? It's become business. It's become business. But back then it was a lot smaller. And, you know, I'm not going to say I take pride, but I pride the relationships that I've built from playing AAU basketball and meeting a lot of guys. And, you know, it's led to some great personal relationships for me, and I've been able to keep in contact with people, and we've been able to like motivate and push each other.
Well, you should, though.
Certain points in our life.
And you should. But, and you should take pride in it. I mean, it was an awesome program. Yeah, yeah. I mean, as a youngster, I heard about PG Jaguars. You know, that was it back in the day. And Ray is mentioning Big Ron. When I say take us out, big homie, that's Big Ron. You hear that voice saying peace, that's Big Ron. On Twitter, my man at Insane Smitty tweeted about the documentary. I thought it did a good job explaining the history to the world. There should be a football one, too.
Yeah, there, you know, a lot of people, that's another thing, you know, there are a lot of great football players that come from this area. One of them was featured on a documentary, District Heights on Navarro Bowman.
Yes, sir.
Former all-pro linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers and the Oakland Raiders, well, Las Vegas Raiders now.
Mm-hmm.
He was a product of Prince George's County, a football player. So, you know. It'd be great if they could do it, but I think whether people want to admit it or not, the D.C. metropolitan area, specifically PG County, is a basketball town.
Yeah.
You know, like people are diehard fans of the professional football team.
Yeah.
They, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people almost, it's sick to say it, but kind of on a weekend basis, live or die with that team.
Yeah.
You know, their emotional state. It's dependent upon how that team performs. On a Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, I'm talking to one person.
I know, Rook.
Specifically,
who
used to be like that.
I know, dude. I know you're going with it. It's the truth, though. It's real talk. I said it was real talk. But, I don't know why you keep going in.
No, but, you know, basketball is the core of this area. You know, you go to any court in the summertime, you go to any court anywhere. You're going to see guys, probably like 10 to 15 guys playing back, you know, like a game of, you know, 5-on-5 and then another 5 sitting on the side.
Yeah.
And it was always survival of the fittest, you know, going to different neighborhoods and playing people, you know, it was great. That's what that was, you know, part of my childhood.
And that's what I think was missing, man. Like, that's right there what you're talking about. Like. And in depth, like going to different neighborhoods and featuring the battles, the rivalries, even within high school basketball, man. Like, I know you want to talk about DeMatha, and it's fine, but there are public schools that were putting out ballers, bruh. And then you had stories like Mike Sweetney, who played in Oxon Hill, didn't go to like DeMatha, played at a public school and got drafted. I mean, went to Georgetown, was a lottery pick for the New York Knicks. I mean, like, stories like that, man, feature it. Like, it's the county, PG County, right? I mean, don't get me wrong, DeMatha is definitely part of it, but there are public schools in that county that are putting out stars, man. Like, look at, like, DJ played at Parkdale for how long? You dig what I'm saying? Like, we've had, like, baller at,
Go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? Eddie Baston went to Roosevelt. Like, my thing is that we had basketball players, and Eddie Baston was in the NBA. Like, we've had folks, and sorry, Delonte West, too. I mean, again, public schools, man. Like, talk about that.
You brought up a good point. It would have been interesting if he had just did, opposed to DeMatha, WCA, even if he had just did WCA, because so many people from Prince George's County go to those schools just to play basketball, right? But you're right. It would have been dope if he had and I understand the time constraints, if he had just kind of featured more of the, you know, talk about how the neighborhoods produce the ball players and kind of some of the rivalries in the neighborhoods that were, you know, competitively based off of just basketball in itself.
Yeah, and some like the competitive, like, or going heavy on the run and shoot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, for real, that was it.
Run and shoot was, when it was open,
yeah,
it was a mecca.
It was the mecca.
It was a mecca for basketball. Mm-hmm. It was open 24/7. I remember during that time, I was in, like when it first started, when it first opened, I think I was in high school. I want to say, was I in high school? Or I was in high school, or I was doing my first year at the community college, the local community college. I used to go up there all the time.
Yeah.
All the time and play basketball.
Yeah.
have my membership, if I couldn't sleep at like 2 or 3 in the morning, I would go up there and play basketball, and you would always get a great run.
Yes. Because there's how many courts to play ball? You know what I mean? Like, the weight was true depending on the night, but still, like, it wasn't as crazy or insane as if you're playing at your youth center, right, or playing out back or at your, you know, community center, excuse me. Like, I mean, and then you got to play folks from different, you know, neighborhoods, to be honest with you, which was cool, and all in one gym. Like you said, the mecca of gyms in PG County.
Yeah. You know. It was the mecca. It was the mecca, but you know the ninjas messed it up.
I know, man. They're always messing crap up. They are. But you got to see it, like, pro players play that. Shamika Holzclaw used to play at the run and shoot. She was in the WNBA.
The man who they did a documentary on came up here and played a couple times.
You know what I'm saying? Look, I'm just saying, like, the run and shoot was something special, man. It was something special. But like, I don't want to nitpick, but I'm like you. I think they needed more episodes. I mean, added episodes to this, to the documentary. I'm not saying like The Last Dance, you know, that many, like 10, but you can do some work like 10, you know, maybe 5 episodes, you know what I'm saying? Half of it, because there's so much. Like, they didn't talk about Joe Forte or Keith Bogans. You know what I mean? Like, those individuals back when we were younger, how on that DeMathis squad was like amazing, and Joe Forte going to North Carolina being like one of the better players in North Carolina in recent years at that time. Then you have I'm having a moment right now. Walt Williams. Like, I felt like you could have featured Walt Williams more. Like, Walt Williams like went to University of Maryland in a jacked up and stayed there within a jacked up situation coming out of Crossland. That's a dude that you could have, you know, that's a dude that could have went elsewhere, stayed in Maryland to follow the footsteps of Lynn Bias.
Yeah, to me, there are, you know, like, local players who attended Maryland. There are 3 players who forever changed the trajectory, in my opinion, of Maryland basketball, that were locally born and bred. Lynn Bias, of course, Walt Williams, and Steve Francis. Okay.
Yes.
Just my opinion. Now, there are a lot of great players who, you know, from the area who played at Maryland, like Dwayne Simpkins.
Mm-hmm.
But those 3 players kind of changed the trajectory.
And you're saying from the DMV area, right?
Yes. Yes, that were born and raised here.
Got you. Yeah, now I agree.
Played high school basketball.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, you know what I mean? Like, I think that I would have liked for him to be featured a little bit more. Like, that kind of, I was like, eh. Like, he did, like, a couple of cameos, so, like, the people, like, even kids in this area wouldn't know how awesome he was. You know what I'm saying? Like, growing up, I didn't like watching Maryland, but growing up, if I got a chance to catch Walt Williams, I was like, I'm watching this dude. You know what I'm saying? The High Sox.
The High Sox.
Yeah. The Wizard, man. You know? Like, you followed Walt Williams. You know what I'm saying? And he was a bucket. Like, he was a bucket. Like, shooting threes. He had a J. Like, he was a bucket. So, yeah, I would have liked for them to feature him more. But again, like you said, Will, it's hard to put all that, you know, in a documentary. You know what I'm saying? It's hard. Yeah, it's complicated.
It's a lot of history, man. A lot of history.
You know, so. All right. Since The Last Dance is bringing up GOAT talk, we'll debate who the top 5 greatest Washington Wizards/Bullets are after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, and Ray Jeezy's out. Y'all listen to Fight Northeast Groovers. Y'all know what time it is. For my DMV folk, y'all know about Northeast, that fight song. All right, Will T. You know, this kind of sparked my sparked my imagination. Our discussion we had last week, talking about, you know, basketball back in the day when we watched it, you know, and I was like, you know what, we gotta get the local team some love. So, who are your top five greatest Bullets Wizards ever? Then I got a secondary. Question to that too.
One is going to be mad old school, which hardly no one's going to remember, but. You want me to go from five to...
No, you don't have to be in any order, any which way you want. It don't have to be in order, just your top five.
Wes Unseld, probably mm-hmm. number one.
Yeah.
Elvin Hayes.
Yeah, of course.
Gus Johnson.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
This next one's going to be unconventional, but the numbers he put up during his very... during a brief period while he was here, no one's been able to replicate. Gilbert Arenas.
A lot of people have this similar list. I want you to know that, like, the list that you have right now on our Facebook page is very similar to that list that you're saying right now. Go ahead.
And number five, I'm going to go with the former voice of the Washington Wizards, Phil Schneer.
Ooh, Phil. Okay. So I like that one. I do like it. All right. So I'm going to go with, Wes Unseld. I didn't have to watch Wes Unseld. I just knew about him from watching Bullet games, and they used to talk about him relentlessly. Even when he was like a GM, was like Wes Unseld. All right, Wes Unseld, Hayes, Earl the Pearl Monroe. I feel like he spent most of the time in New York, but he still had an impact in DC. Baltimore. Played with Baltimore more than DC. Yeah, right?
I get that too. All
right, Earl. I'm gonna I'll go with Gilbert, with Gil. And I will go with John Wall as five.
I'm gonna go with John Wall as five.
Yeah, I like John Wall. I think John Wall is like one of the best Wizards players. Definitely between him and Gil are the best Wizard players I've seen. Period. Here in DC, in my viewership, the other individuals I haven't really watched enough to kind of gauge their impact. But I know Gus Johnson is one, but I just like John Wall. I think John Wall has the opportunity to be elite. Some people had Bradley Beal on their top five list. So, I mean, I know would you debate that, Bradley Beal on your top five list?
Not at this point.
So would John Wall be over Bradley Beal or vice versa in your list?
I would go with Wall over Beal.
Okay. Now, I think it's a tough one. All right, so this is my secondary question. I think this is fun. This is easier because it's more in the times that we watch basketball. In terms of as a youth to now, what is your top five Bullets Wizards for you, for viewership, not people that you may have, like, you didn't see, guys you saw play basketball for the Washington okay. Wizards Bullets?
Number five, I'm going to go with Bernard King.
All right.
Four. Four, I'm going to go with John Wall.
Okay.
Three, I'm going to go with that I saw play. You know what? F it. Cool. I'm going to go with Antoine Jameson.
Okay. Yeah, it's not a bad one.
Two, even though he didn't play here that long, I'm gonna go with Rod Strickland.
Oh man, I think that's a good one. I don't think there's nothing wrong with that, to be honest with you.
And then number one, I'm gonna go with Gil.
Of course, yeah. I don't think there's nothing wrong with adding Rod Strickland too. I think that team brought a lot of fans back to DC. I don't think anybody on that any of the big three on that roster is bad, you know, to call in your list. So George tweeted us, Will T, including Gilbert Arenas, is spot on. You think about the wreckage of the MJ era and Arenas' ludicrous decisions to sign with the Wizards when they never got free agents. The thrill ride he took us on was unforgettable, even if the end of it stunk.
Yeah. And then if I have two more spots, I'm going to go with Googs.
Oh, that's a good one. Googs, yeah, man.
And then I am going to go with, even though his career was brief, I'm going to go with Chris Webber.
Yeah, Chris Webber is one that a lot of people kind of had on their list. All right, so I had to go, but they actually had Chris Webber on the top five of all time list. If I had to go with folks, in terms of when I was young to now, so I'm not gonna say like Mitchell Butler, that's or Kyle Chaney, that's hilarious. I'm going to go with I'm gonna go with first would be Bernard King, because Bernard King was like. Was it back then, right? Bernard King.
Yep. Could score anything. Way
yeah. And they would throw Bernard King in our faces like when we were younger on local TV. It would be Bernard King this, Bernard King that. So you already knew like Bernard King was that dude for the Bullets at the time. Then I'm gonna go with if I have to go from generation, I'm gonna go with actually I'm gonna go unconventional. I'm gonna go with Juwan. I'm gonna go with Juwan because he could have left. He stayed and helped build the culture. Juwan helped build the culture, and Rod too.
I mean, he only reason he didn't leave is because his contract.
I know through. He was ready to go, but they offered him the bag. Wouldn't you leave too? That's $100 mil. What are we talking about?
Yeah, at that time, no one was getting that.
Yeah,
money.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. I'm with you. All right, I got Gil. I definitely got Gil. You know what? I'm gonna go real unconventional. So you had Antoine. I'm going to go with Larry Hughes. Something about Larry Hughes and Gil, that backcourt, to me, was one of the funnest backcourts to ever watch in this area. I know, you know, people are into Karan, but I felt like that Gil, Larry Hughes, Antoine Jameson trio was so underrated.
I'll give you that.
You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to go with Larry Hughes. Because of the sheer entertainment, because you can see Larry Hughes and Gilbert Arenas like competing with each other on the court, like literally it was like anything you can do, I can do better type thing. And then John Wall, my last, I'll go John Wall. But like you, I mean, I would love to put Chris Webber on that team. I used to think that the Wizards would get the Bullets, Wizards, whatever you want to call them, would get Jalen Rose, and they would have all three of them.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that wanted it to happen. They didn't think it would happen. People wanted it to happen.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they went and they traded him for Mitch Richmond.
I know, man. But
I was a fan of Mitch.
Mitch was a beast.
Not that Mitch.
Yeah, not that Mitch. Yeah. And then honorable mention, man, Michael Adams, man. We got to throw love. He went to the All-Star game, man.
His form was ugly. Conventional.
Yeah.
But he was effective.
Yeah, he was, man. I'm another individual, and we listen, folks. Now, Rex Chapman. Again, these are people who were really highlighted when I was younger. Rex Chapman was highlighted while he was here in D.C. Then he left and had more success when he left here. Who else? Who else was like really showcased? I remember when they got Kevin
Tom
Duckworth.
Gugliotta.
Yeah, Tom Googs was good though. Like Googs was better than when he left, but Googs was always good. Don McLean. Who else is featured? Like, I mean, they got Kevin Duckworth, and they tried to like hype Kevin Duckworth to the area.
And we had
Brent. When they had Brent before Mark. And everybody thought Brent would be Mark. Well, who else did they have? Like, obviously George Marisson. He was solid though.
Manute Bol.
Yeah. Manute Bol was solid, man. He was real solid. You know what I mean? I'm trying to think. Obviously, like I mentioned, Liddell Echols. He used to have a couple good games. Actually, I ain't gonna lie, Liddell Echols was like one of my favorite Bullets players back then. I'm not going, even though I joke around, but he was actually one of my favorite Bullets players because he was real streaky. But Michael Adams to me, I guess if I had to be really fair with the situation without going back and like without putting myself at that moment, Michael Adams for a while was to me like the best Wizard. I mean Bullet, excuse me. For a while.
Yeah, I mean during that period, look, Michael Adams, he when he came to DC, he was just coming off of a year when I think he averaged like almost like 28 and 10. And then he came to DC, he didn't put up quite those type of numbers, but he came close to averaging 20 points, which hadn't been done here in DC in a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So George tweeted us again real quick before we go to break. He said, Larry Hughes is a good one, but man, he got first all defense, and Dwayne Wade treated him like a cat treats a toy, and it was hard to watch them heat sweep the Wizards. Oh, they sweep them that year in the playoffs?
I'm not sure.
I gotta go back. I know they beat the Bulls 1 year in the playoffs. That's when Juan Dixon was on the squad. They beat the Bulls in round one. Gil and Larry Hughes went ham. Actually, Kwame Brown was having a good couple games before. I think he got hurt. Kwame Brown, like, he was turning the corner that game. Why nobody said Kwame Brown was one of the best Wizards of all time?
Get out of here. Don't even start that, man.
Nobody wanted to say Kwame. That's messed up, man. Y'all forgetting about Kwame Brown. That's messed up.
You should get out of here.
For shame. For shame, people. For shame. Kwame Brown, man, got bullied out of basketball. For shame.
That might have been what happened.
What, he got bullied out of basketball because of the GOAT, the so-called GOAT?
Might have been what happened.
Who knows, man? I mean, if you can't, I'm not going to trash MJ for that. I understand, like, what it means to a youngster to have, like, an all-time great, or to you, like, the best player ever, to, like, to chastise you, to put you down. But at the same time, man, like, if you're going to be that dude, you fight through it, because you're going to have, in terms of adversity, you're going to deal with much, much more. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like, So I'm not going to be the one to bash, like, some folks like to bash Jordan, call him bully. I'm not the one to do that. I feel like, hey, you can handle your own. You're a grown ass man. All right. The final episode to The Last Dance went down Sunday. We'll discuss them after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy's out. Let me cue my man Will T on the show. As you know, it's the social distance show with the Urban Sports Scene. We keep it safe and no one's in the studio but myself, but I have Will T on the phone. All right, the final episodes of The Last Dance aired Sunday. What stood out to you about the last episodes, Will T?
How they weren't specifically about The Last Dance.
You didn't think it was better? I thought this was like, actually, they finally sunk into 98.
It was good. I'm not, you know, I think this was the, what people really wanted to see, like how it went down towards the end, right? Like specifically that last season.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. I definitely enjoyed the part, you know, with Michael Jordan just giving kind of some context about that series against Indiana in 98, you know, when they went seven games, mm-hmm. which, you know, we all, you know, whenever LeBron goes seven games in the Eastern Conference Finals or the Western Conference Finals or even in the NBA Finals, you know, people, you know, give him hell. And they act like Jordan never went to a game seven in the finals.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he definitely was pushed in the playoffs, right? And, you know, almost went to seven games against Utah in that last, you know, that last championship run. So it was interesting hearing that. And then it was, I think it was good to hear Scottie Pippen give his kudos to Jerry Krause and tell like it is, like Jerry Krause was one of the better NBA GMs of all time. Right? Now I know that, you know, Jordan, you had Pippen, but you still had to put the rest of the right pieces around those players. So you can continue that championship run, those championship runs.
Yeah, I think that I'm with you in terms of I thought that Pacers team was ready. You know what I mean? You would think, but you know what? The funny thing about that series is that, again, this is the importance. I want folks to understand that this is the, we all, you know, because it's Jordan, we kind of like throw it out there like, you know, Jordan closed out the Pacers and whatnot. But, and I think this documentary showed that, you know, no one man can win a championship. Now, he can take you home. Don't get it twisted. Like, and Jordan definitely did that for the Bulls. But no one man can win a championship. And if you look at, even in that series, right against Indiana, Game 7, Jordan wasn't phenomenal. You know what I mean? Like, we talk about, you know, Jordan always closed folks out in Game 7s or elimination games or this, that, and the other. But we've seen, if you do your research and you look at some of, because the documentary, because, again, it's the documentary, they're not going to show, you know, a lot of the bad outings or this, that, and the other. And I don't expect them to be honest with you. It's a documentary. So it's a documentary that Jordan has to control in, put it that way. But, you know, like a team does, you know, you need your teammates and your teammates, your coaches, whatever, to lean on to help you get through and help you, you know, get the ultimate goal. One man doesn't win a championship. Now, again, one man can help close the series out, which you saw in Utah. He closed it out. But to get to the point to win a championship, to go through the trials and tribulations of a season, one man can't do it.
No, it takes a lot, you know. Now, over the past couple of days, you know, we've heard Scottie Pippen come out and say that he's hurt, how he was projected.
See, remember I told you that last week, though, right? I told you, like, last week. That's how it seemed to me, though.
True. But at the same time, if you Scottie Pippen, you admitted in the documentary that if given the same chance, you know, particularly with the 1.8 seconds against New York, you would do it again. So I don't understand. How are you hurt in the way you're projected? But when you just admitted to us all, if things played out the same way, you would do it again.
Yeah, I mean, Scotty was geeking. I mean, I know he effed up because by saying that statement. But I just felt like in terms of, you know, when you put a story together, right? And the way for certain things Scotty they made Scotty look a certain way. I am happy though that when his back, he had the back elements, it kind of strengthened in terms of putting a movie or plot together. It strengthened Scottie Pippen's character. You know what I'm saying? Because I thought initially the way it was being portrayed, like Scotty was weak. To be real with you, that's how I kind of looked at it. You know what I mean? You see Jordan with the flu game and you see Scotty, you know, sitting out the season, you know, not doing it. It just had that look like Scotty was weak. And at least I felt like in terms of, you know, in that Utah game, they emphasized how tough Scotty was. And even I think the trainer was like, people, you know, thought Scotty was weak and this, that, and the other. Scotty is one of the more competitive, toughest dudes, you know, that's in the league at that particular time. And I kind of like that because at first I wasn't a fan of how things were going. Will T still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Listen, I don't want to tell you what I was just doing, but
it's all good, right?
I'm glad that you kept talking.
Hey, bro, I'm a team player, man. Teamwork make the dream work, bro.
Let's just say that Corona light got to me.
Hey, yo, bro, relax.
Look, I think it was a fair portrayal, and here's why. Like you said, you know, given us, or given, you know, those who watched it, I'm not, I'll be real, I've never seen game, that last game six. the full game, because I remember distinctly I was playing basketball and I was at NC State for a tournament, participating in a basketball tournament for the AAU program we mentioned earlier in the program. Mm-hmm. So I didn't get a chance to see that last final shot live. But it was good to, you know, be able to relive that, because I wasn't able to see that game. And it brought back that memory of, you know, Scottie Pippen grit, you know, grinding it out, you know, doing everything he could do humanly possible to at least be on the floor and provide and provide help to the team, you know, when they're trying to close it out against a very tough Utah team.
Yeah,
could have, you know, all things considered, you know, with Scottie being injured, could have beaten that Bulls team.
Yeah, if he didn't play, because you know, we've seen, you know, in the beginning of the documentary, how valuable, like the storytelling of how valuable Scottie was, you know, when he wasn't, basically showing when he wasn't available, how, you know, that team struggled. And you're playing against a Utah Jazz team with two Hall of Famers. It was going to be difficult to be anyway, and not having Scottie would have made it damn near impossible. So when you saw the, like, they featured the flu game in the episodes. When you saw the flu game for the first, as a youngster, what did you think of that game?
I thought he looked very, really sick. I thought he looked really, really sick. You could tell that he was kind of despondent and out of it. But, you know, that's kind of the allure of Michael Jordan, right? You know, he, winning is the most important thing, you know. He helped. I'm not going to say helped to will the Bulls to win, but he played a major role in contributing and getting that team to win in that game. Game five, I believe, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, game five.
Yeah, for me, let's see. It's funny. I remember because I was such a hater when I was younger. So I'm trying to think, like, what was, like, my thought process? Oh, I knew what I said. I said he was faking. I was like, this dude faking, like, I don't know what. There's no way this dude about to die off the flu.
Sounds like something you would say about
I'm being real. Like, when I was younger, I was like, I had the flu, bro. Like, if I had to, there's no way. Like, I was like, I mean, I was like damn near out of it when I had the flu. But I was like, I ain't playing if I had the flu. And secondly, I was like, if I was at that state of mind, like, there's no way, like, I'm playing. I'm not even shooting the ball like that. So back then, I was such a hater. Now, you know, I appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? Because it just shows you the will, right? And that's why some people are successful and some people aren't, right? It's like you have the will, the drive to push through anything. And you got to get credit when credit's due. I think, you know, for him to go through that process, make big buckets down the stretch, you know, hone in on your craft. I know people say, like, they make this, you know, they make it sound so, like, easy. Like, you know, sometimes when you're sick or you're hurt, you can just focus and you're just in the zone and, you know, you don't really pay attention. You get to a point where you're just overly focused now and you're on every little thing and now you're a better basketball player, this, that, and the other. You hear it all the time. You know, now it's referenced like the flu game for Jordan. People use that as a reference of how they can persevere through, you know, some type of ailment or injury and play even better. And I'm always thinking to myself, like, that's a bunch of BS. Like, you know what I mean? It's hard. And that dude just did it. You know what I'm saying? It's just the will of a person that just doesn't want to take no for no for no answer for no answer. A dude that just wants to, you know, show you that he's the best player on the court. You know what I mean? You gotta get credit when credit's due, man. And that's something that, you know, I commend.
You know, it just furthered the myth behind Michael Jordan. I do, you know, the whole pizza delivery. Now, we know, like, Michael Jordan has stated that he has made up stories to motivate him, right?
Uh-huh.
I have to ask. I think it's very fair to ask because he's, you know, because he admitted to the LeBradford Smith story, yeah. Right? Could he be embellishing about the fact of the pizza guys?
I don't think he is.
Did something to give him him food poisoning.
You know, I don't think he is because I think Kobe had a similar. Was that Denver? Was that Denver? I think Kobe had a similar thing though too. Was it Utah or Denver? Where they poisoned this food. I think it may have been Denver. I want to say it was Utah, but I'm sure. I'm thinking it's Denver, maybe. Maybe it was Denver.
Probably. It's probably Denver. People in Denver. Probably feeling probably a lot stronger towards Kobe Bryant, right? Than the people in Utah.
Yeah,
maybe
I know, right?
Something happened. Maybe something happened there. I'm not going to talk about
it. I know, right, man? But yes, I don't know. I would hope he didn't. I mean, he was. That's a lot of, you know, I would hope that he wasn't lying about that. You know, but does it really matter? I mean, it's not that him being poisoned by a pizza. It's more of him being sick playing basketball. I think the thing, I mean, you know what I mean? Him being sick playing ball is the most important part of it anyway. So I don't get why he would lie about that, because now you're just lying for no reason. Because it doesn't add to anything, right?
Cause, it doesn't.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised, though. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I don't think Jordan's the most honest individual in the world. But we're here to talk about his basketball, man. His basketball game. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not gonna deny the fact that he possibly was sick from eating the pizza. But as far as food poisoning, I don't know. That may just be you adding a little something on top of that mic just to,
you know. I feel you. Some more of the you know, more of a storyline for the doc. Yeah. It's possible, man.
Yeah.
It's possible. All right, so Steve Kerr's father dying, man. Like, how did that, like, that was like, I felt bad for Steve Kerr after that. I was like, at first I was like, why are you profiling Steve Kerr? When I was watching, I was like, why are you profiling him? Steve Kerr, he's a role player. And then when they go in the story, I was like, oh man, his father, shoot. Tough, man.
Yeah, that I don't know if a lot of people know that about Steve Kerr, but that was it's something I you know, I remember reading about him, reading about that situation happening. Plus, you know, Steve Kerr, he was money for that team down the stretch.
He was.
So he should get his inclusion.
I feel you. I mean, yeah, he was a great spot up shooter for the team. I mean, no, he was good though, man. He made a lot of shots down the stretch in many of those series. When he joined the team for during that three-peat time, in Indiana, he was hitting buckets left and right. I remember that game because I thought the Bulls were going to lose that game, and he was hitting buckets left and right. Steve Kerr. I mean, he's a valuable player to the team. I like how they compared him. Like, I like how he talked about how, you know, John Paxson took him under his wing. I just swore when I was younger that Steve Kerr was a better basketball player than John Paxson. I like how they match white boys to white boys. You know, white small point guards to each other. Like, you know what I mean? I'm glad that
they do it in people. The NFL with quarterbacks.
I know. I'm glad it just happened with black quarterbacks. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, at first I was like,
it's only. I mean, I guess it's only right.
It's only right. Because I was like, when I was watching, you know, I was like, oh, say, okay, they do it for white point guards too, who can spot up shoot. I didn't know that. That kind of caught me off guard. But yeah, Steve Kerr was valuable. I'm not saying he wasn't valuable. I'm just saying, like, Steve Kerr got a profile. Tony Kukoc didn't. He barely got a profile. All Tony Kukoc got was being bullied. He ain't getting no real profile. He got like a shot.
Tony Kukoc had his moment.
He had like a shot, man.
His moment.
Yeah.
I think that he had his moment.
Yeah. Steve Kerr was way better though. He was like way better. Maybe I'm like exaggerating. I thought Steve Kerr was way better than Tony Kukoc. But maybe his story was better. I mean, I think when you're doing a doc, it's all about putting a story together.
It's about telling the most compelling story.
That's true. That is true. All right, Rodman going to WCW during the NBA Finals in '98, like Monday Nitro.
Rodman being Rodman. I mean, look, people can say whatever they want to say about Phil Jackson. He kept that team focused. He knew what buttons to push, and he knew what freedoms to extend to which players to get them motivated and get the best out of.
Yeah, Phil was great, man. Like, my thing is I said this before when he was dealing with Rodman, even when Rodman went to Vegas, and I'm going to be redundant, but it is what it is. Like, you don't coach everybody the same, all right? You just don't. You know what I mean? You know, like, Dennis Rodman is that, like, you could let him do whatever, but when he comes back, you're going to get that same effort, because Dennis Rodman is an effort player. You're going to get that same effort regardless. You know what I'm saying? Like, obviously, you don't want other players to think, well, you let Dennis Rodman do it. But again, the other players, you're not Dennis Rodman. You know what I'm saying? You're not Dennis Rodman. You can't get 15 to 20 boards. You're not one of the all-time greatest rebounders in the game. So you can't compare yourself to Dennis Rodman. But Dennis Rodman is still able to defend. He's still able to run the floor. He's still able to rebound. You know what I mean? Like, he's bringing that to the table. And he's even pretty much said that, you know, when I'm on the floor, I go hard. Like, you know what I'm saying? He goes hard regardless. So I commend Phil, because any other coach, young coach, or coach who's trying to prove themselves, even as a vet, would, you know, try to punish Dennis Rodman, like, to a point where maybe he doesn't even start, he doesn't play. Phil was like, man, it's Dennis. You know, I know what Dennis can bring to the floor. I know when Dennis is on the court, he's going to play for Scotty. He's going to play for Michael. He's going to play for Tony Kukoc. He's going to play for Steve Kerr. You know what I'm saying? He's going to play for Ron Harper. You know what I mean? You appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? So I commend Phil Jackson. You know, other coaches can learn from Phil, to be real with you, off that alone, that lesson alone.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Jordan, like, let Jordan do what he wants to. He's getting you buckets. Everybody's not equal, man. When it comes to coaching, everybody's not equal. They got to stop doing that. All right, as a whole, what did you learn from the documentary?
Not a whole lot, because like I said, I love basketball. Basketball is my first love. It's the first thing I've ever, you know, outside of my family, I've ever loved in my life. So I try to read just about every piece of material that ever comes out around basketball. So I read Sam Smith's Jordan Rules. I read Phil Jackson, both of his books. And then there was another book around Jordan. I forgot the name of it, but I read that one too. So a lot of those things have been covered in there. Mm. It did bring up some great memories, though.
Yeah, of course. I think so, too, for me,
know,
too.
So it brought up some great memories for me. But
no, it brought some great memories in terms of, like, 90s basketball, what I did appreciate of 90s basketball. That's the basketball, you know, I'm growing up watching. I will say this, though, what I've learned about it, being on social media, because, well, you're not on social media, and it's fine. But I've learned this, though. Like this documentary, for some, you know, has, like, stamped their belief. Like, all right, boom, I told you, like, Jordan was the GOAT, you know, because this documentary portrayed that Jordan was the GOAT. And I'm like, you all do know this is a doc. Like we mentioned earlier, this is a doc. And regardless of what you feel about Jordan, if you think that Jordan is the GOAT, then, you know, you shouldn't let the documentary, like, stamp anything. You should already know. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying, Will? Because it's nothing different from what we've seen growing up. You know what I'm saying? But you do have to understand that it's a documentary, and they're going to portray everything Jordan does in this documentary as pretty, other than a few, you know, trials and tribulations like the Pistons series and whatnot. They're going to portray a lot of the things as Jordan, you know, overcoming, showing you that, you know, he's always done right, you know, playing a game of basketball. So, and then people like to bring LeBron James into this whole equation, which I'm still trying to figure out. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought we learned when Kobe's death that we don't need to, like, use this one individual to tear down another individual. You know what I'm saying? I thought we learned by that. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to, you know, just appreciate everybody's greatness. You dig what I'm saying? Like, appreciate everybody's greatness. You don't have to say, well, you know, LeBron can't do this, or LeBron can't play in this era because XYZ. You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know what I'm saying? Because we all play ball. Like, we play ball, Will. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if you got that dog mentality, if you're that talented, you're going to be able to play in a particular, in any area, era, to be honest with you. Because, like, human beings and everything, and just like in life, one, evolution happens, that's one. And secondly, adaptation happens. So if you're that dude in terms of your basketball skills and you're in another area, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? You will adapt. That's what happens. You adapt. You adapt to the rules, and you adapt to the style.
I agree. You know, totally agree with you.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because I use this example all the time. Not even Jordan. Like, Jordan came back and played for the Wizards and still able to give you 40-some-odd points, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan was older and whatever, but he was what? He was greatness. So greatness adapts to the times. You get what I'm saying? Magic Johnson came back fat and sloppy, was still able to average in, like, 9 games, average close to a double-double, close to a triple-double. Again, greatness adapts to the times. So when we get to this debate, like, oh, he couldn't play in this era, this, that, and the other. Understand, if this person is real greatness, this player will adapt. It happens. And again, evolution happens too, so the athletes get better. But if we were talking about who could play in what generation, if you're great, you can play in any generation. That's why I wanted to like end off at, because I'm having an issue with people who like trying to tear down other athletes just because they, you know, they just saw a documentary. Greatness is greatness.
Agreed, my friend.
Thanks, you. Agreed. Thank you, Will T, man. And that's real talk. All right, subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Will T, great job as always. You always hold it down. You know what I'm saying? PG Jaguars All-Star, Will T. He wanted to be modest. My man liked to be modest and stuff. But he was like, basically, you know what I'm saying? He's one of the pioneers of this whole AAU thing. You know what I mean?
Come on, man.
That squad. I know. That squad. You know what I'm saying? Big Ron, Will T. Like I don't know. Like, you got to start it from the mud to get it to the top. And they were in the mud, man. So they were doing it. So FYI. If you don't even know what Will T look like. If you did see Will T in the street, say what's up. Say you the Godfather. All right, man. You've been listening to The Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hey, Mega, lead us out, big homie. To the swag.